call this meeting to order. We have a little bit of an agenda change this morning. So after we do the Pledge of Allegiance and public comment number one, the first item on our agenda is actually going to be a discussion about closing the county early today and having tomorrow being closed also. And then there'll be a short break while we kind of coordinate a media release in part. And then we'll come back and we'll start on the rest of the agenda. So would all who are care to please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Public comment. Would anyone care to come up and address the board on anything or even on today's agenda? No one. We're going to move now to this added item. So if Deb, if you'd like to stay right there, and Elizabeth, come on up, and we'll discuss the possibility of closing the county early today and having that stay closed tomorrow due to the severe cold that is being predicted.
Laura Walker, coming up, would you mind announcing what your decision was on tonight's meeting, regardless of how this conversation?
Yes. We will be canceling tonight's Master Maker. And Leanne's ready to go with a poker, almost ready to go with press release and get it out there.
And no time to reschedule at this point?
No time to reschedule at this point. I will make note that, you know, this is twice that the staff and the City of Nevada and the City of Nevada Police Department have worked very well together to identify two evening meetings at off-site location. I don't know that we're going to be able to do that a third time or that we even are going to make an effort to do that a third time. That'll be a separate discussion with I'll have with staff and some other entities afterwards. So now I see we're situated. Good morning, and could you two help us walk through the process should we decide to close today early at 1 o'clock?
Sure. Good morning. I'm just going to read out of our implement letter policy. It says, in extreme circumstances that may be necessary to close the administration building or other county offices and facilities or have a late start. If an employee's office is officially closed by the Board of Supervisors, then regular employees will be paid for hours lost due to the closing of the office. If there is a decision for a late start, full-time employees will be paid for hours between the regularly scheduled start time and the delayed start time. So just a little clarification on this. It happens very rarely. And how it is implemented is employees are paid for their lost hours. So they're scheduled for 8 hours a day. If you close and are unable to finish their 8-hour shift, the county has paid for the remainder of their shift, of those 8 hours. If an employee, say, called in sick or was on vacation leave that week, it would still be considered sick or vacation because it wasn't the closing that kept them from finishing their shift that day. That's how it's been handled in the past. That's how our policy is written.
How does it work with different elected officials? Do they each make that decision to close their office or let staff go early, or is that rest at the Board of Supervisors?
The Board officially closes the building, and that's what triggers this policy. As far as letting staff go early, vacation, that is between the individual and their supervisor in the office. That's also part of this policy. If the employee, you know, if the roads are bad and they work it out with their supervisor, it does say they can take a day of vacation if they don't feel safe. We don't want employees traveling when they don't feel like they can travel. They use their own judgment when the offices are open in regards. I don't recall that we've had an elected official close their office and trigger this policy. It's always been when the Board of Supervisors closes the building, makes that determination, then that's when the employees are paid for their office.
So I've been here 8 years now, and I I've been here, we've had one early closure and one late start. I don't think we've ever closed for a full day. At least I can't remember it if we have. I think that what we're dealing with here, or potentially dealing with here, is a whole different level. I think the fact that we see Iowa State now closing for 2.5 days. They won't reopen again until noon Thursday. I don't remember ever seeing that before. I think it's worth our time to talk this through. The thing I want to point out is there's no real budgetary implications to making a decision like this. There is productivity implications, right? We lose some productivity from our employees, but in essence, we just continue to pay as if we were open, which is what we budgeted for. We just lose the productivity of that time.
One other item to just point out here, there will be individuals that will have to work. We have 24/7 operations. We do have to work regardless if the actual offices are closed. There's no additional compensation. They get paid for their shift. I mean, if they work overtime, that's separate from here. But there's no additional compensation above and beyond. If they're not able to work the full shift, like if it's the facilities department, you're here half a day, then they would be compensated for that 8-hour shift.
So if we were looking at 1 p.m. today until 8 a.m. on Thursday morning, for what would that mean for facilities and the secondary roads and first responders, our jail and deputy departments? Because I'm thinking about facilities. Would a second shift be called in on Wednesday then, or would it still be scheduled?
In the past, they haven't called them in. We do have a new director. The point for facilities is still that they had to come in and clear the lot. I mean, they're still that type of maintenance, but if the building was closed, and the building was closed, if there's something that you know, has to be done, then those employees still have to report to work.
And then for the jail, for the sheriff, anyone under the sheriff, how is that handled? And then for secondary roads, is it on a call-in basis if there's no snow?
Yeah, I spoke with Darren, the county engineer, this morning, and he said that the northeast part of the county roads up there, they're still impassable roads because of the wind and the snow that's drifting across. It seems to be a little bit worse up there than it is compared to other parts of the county. But tomorrow, with the wind dying down, it gives secondary roads crews an option or an opportunity to make some headway on getting things cleared out. Right now, if they clear out a road, it's blowing closed again. So it would be his call as far as bringing those crews out. He did also say that it's helpful that he has an office staff person, whoever that may be, in the office to take any calls that were coming in on days like today or when there's been inclement weather. So again, I think that would be his call as to whether or not somebody would need to come in to manage the phone.
Since the buildings, we would be doing the closure of the buildings for exempt employees and elected officials who might want to come in tomorrow. What is the policy on that? Should we plan on not having that option based upon whether facilities comes in to clear out the parking lot and all the buildings? Or does that cause problems if some of the exempt employees who opt on their own or elected officials opt to come in? You know, just like if it were a Saturday or something.
Yeah, that's a great question. So let me, if you don't mind, I want to make a recommendation for you guys to chew over and then we can see where we get. My recommendation is that we close to the public as of 1 p.m. today and we stay closed all day. Wednesday we open for normal business on Thursday morning. And that part of that closure to the public is that we give each one of our department heads and, of course, our elected officials the ability to determine what they need from their staff But all of our buildings will be closed to the public beginning at 1 p.m. today and running all day tomorrow.
Okay. Could I just get you some information here? Keith Morgan was planning on holding a jurisdictional workshop tomorrow evening and has not called it off, and it would be in this building.
Well, if we're closed,
so it should be that closed. That would mean that he could not hold it here. We did that, correct? Just for information, because I was going to be attending and I saw his email, so that's why I asked.
After we take the vote here, we will be taking about either that or after the discussion of item agenda number 4, we'll be taking a small break so that Alyssa, Deb, and Leanne Harder Outreach can coordinate about sending out an appropriate press release. I think Leanne's got a shell started, and I can take a look at it. And so then it might be a good time to contact Keith Morgan and just let him know someone could do that. Looking out at either staff or, it could take him for offering to do that. So at least we know if we need to add that to the press release. Okay. So if he's having that workshop, who would be coming in?
There's only about 5 people, and I'm sure he'd be willing to contact them. He just needs to know.
All right. Got it. So you guys take care of it. All right. So is there any input from anyone else?
Any further thoughts? A question about the sheriff's office.
Yes.
They are as normal. They're deputies in the jail 24/7.
Okay.
That's not really. My question would be the clerk of court.
Okay.
The state offices.
Yeah, the whole court
system. Mm-hmm. Okay. We have DHS
of
our name. Okay. So by what Rick said, as far as the elected official determining, I would imagine there's court tomorrow, unless they cancel. I haven't.
I believe that the Board of Supervisors, if the Board of Supervisors so chooses, has the ability to close any of our buildings, mm-hmm. including the court, to the public.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how the court will feel about that, but I don't know that that's necessarily part of our conversation right now. Our conversation, as I see it, is if the three of us deem that there is enough of a safety concern, that the conditions warrant closure, then we make that decision to close, and everybody who deals with the public in one of our buildings is going to have to accommodate that decision.
Go ahead, Professor Martin. Oh, I didn't know if you wanted to speak there.
I think I'm ready to make a motion.
All right. I would move that we close all county buildings to the public from 1 p.m. Tuesday today to 8 a.m. this Thursday, with the exception of 24/7 operations and essential operations.
Yeah, I'll second. Okay. I need clarification on the last part of your motion. So our essential operations and our first responders, that's not, they deal with the public, but all I think we're talking about doing is saying our doors are closed to members of the public, and everything else that happens beyond that, including facilities, movement, snow in the parking lot, if Joby so deems that that's needed, Darren Moon working with his Secretary of Roads, as I view it, we're giving the motion that I would like us to get to is we're closing to the public, and everything else that happens around that is at the discretion of our department heads and elected officials. But we're not open to members of the public coming into any of our buildings.
Okay. Are you open to an amendment on that?
I have an amendment motion.
Yeah, and I don't know that I need to.
It doesn't. In terms of direction about employees, it doesn't give that. That's the only thing. But maybe you're saying that needs to be another motion, or we don't need a motion.
So for clarity and cleanness, I would like it if we got to a motion that was the first part of your motion, Linda. It was we close as of one to the public as of 1 p.m. today, and we reopen at 8 a.m. Thursday, and we just leave everything else alone.
Okay. Right.
And I'll second her amendment. So, Shelly, that gets us down just to the first part of the motion.
Right. Okay. All right. There's no further discussion on the motion. Perkins?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. Now, follow up then internally with directions to, now I'm going to think it's Alyssa and Deb as internal director of operations, external director of operations, for you two to communicate outward with the affected staff and other elected officials. Is that correct? I've never done this before.
There typically is an email that comes out from the board chair, but if the board chair or the board would like to direct us to send an email out, that is fine. I mean, it's however the board would
like. You want to craft it, and then I'll send it, I guess, or look it over first?
Yeah, so if I could make a suggestion, I would hope that start immediately, we would ask Leanne to draft a release and Alyssa to draft an email. And once those two things are done, then I would suggest we take a 5-minute recess for you to review those and get them out.
Right. Okay. So I believe Leanne had started on that with the release to the public. And Alyssa, have you started already on something that would go out? Okay. Super. And then you guys let me know and we'll take the break. All right. Thank you. Little difference in the morning. All right, now, I'm Shelly.
Hi.
Okay. To item number 4 on the agenda, which is discussion and consideration of funding a funding request from Community and Family Services, and that's for the Iowa Department of Public Health Substance Abuse Prevention Services / Supply in Story County. So, Shelly, come on up and introduce yourself, please, and let us know what you'd like.
Hi, Shelly.
Hi. I am the Mission Supervisor at Community and Family Resources. Can you pull the microphone up?
Okay.
Sure. I'm writing it down a little bit. I'm Shelly Zabel. I'm a Provincial Supervisor at Community and Family Resources. And last fall, Iowa Department of Public Health put out a request for proposal for substance abuse prevention and treatment services. And our agency applied. We were selected as the provider for both treatment and prevention services for Boone and Story County. Not a lot of differences except for the addition of prevention. We are requesting $7,200 to assist with things such as evidence-based curriculum, evidence-based curriculum training. Sometimes there are services that we aren't able to provide under the Iowa integrated network provider funding, things like if we had a group of youth that were doing a service project. We're able to help them plan a project, but we're not able to be there that day under these funds. Just one of the rules that they have. If there's a child that's already seeking or in treatment services, then prevention is not allowed to provide youth development kinds of experience. And also to make development experiences. I put on your sheet the strategic prevention framework, which we'll be using to address needs in Story County. It's an 18-month contract initially with the Iowa Department of Public Health, and in that first 6 months, we'll be providing the evidence-based things, and then in that second part of the contract, the full year, we'll be doing needs assessments so that we're able to know what the needs are in Story County and provide relevant services.
Shelly, are you asking for a similar sum from each of the other counties?
We are.
All right.
We are. Yes. We know that we typically don't have enough dollars in each of our counties to fulfill a whole year of services. And this new RFP is very, very much focused on evidence-based, which is great stuff, but it's expensive. So,
I'll declare at this point, I sit on the CFR board, so I benefit in no way directly from this. I believe it would be legal for me to vote. I just want to make it known up front that I've been sitting on the board.
See, the number of times we vote on things where we also serve on a board that touches me, we can't get into.
We never have a vote.
Absolutely. So if I could start, I so appreciate, well, first of all, congratulations on getting the grant. Thank you. And I so appreciate the request here. So just by way of history, of course, for you and Linda, the way Story County has typically dealt with a request like this, even an outstanding request, has been to refer it to the asset administrative team just to have them filter through the other kinds of human services components that we have that might touch something like this. I can think of two or three different occasions where we've had a request like this, even from somebody who's outside the asset process, as CFR is, that we've asked for our asset administrative team to take a look at it, ask whatever questions they have, get those answered, and then it come back to us as a board to make it a funding decision. So that's what I'm suggesting we do. I don't know that 2 weeks would be enough time, but I think 2 weeks, I'm looking at Deb Shildroff, who's on that asset administrative team, 2 weeks would be enough time to take a look at this and make a recommendation. I'd like us to be consistent with what we've done in the past in considering something like this.
I can certainly pass information on to the asset administrative team. I think we are meeting actually next week. However, the issue is we would, if CFR wants to be brought into the asset process, that application, there's a letter of intent that's due right now, I believe by the 1st of June.
No.
So let me tell you, I'm not suggesting that CFR go through the asset process. I'm just suggesting that, and the most recent one I recall is I think Amos had a request one time that was not part of the asset process. It wasn't moving into the asset process, but we still ran it through the administrative team just to look at it holistically with everything else we're doing in Story County and how, because you know, this seems to me, especially when we're talking about development opportunities for youth and things like that, it seems to me like it's going to touch a lot of different things that we're already doing in asset. And I just know for me, I want to understand how it impacts everything as we make any kind of extra outside the asset process funding decision.
And it's interesting because at the joint funders meeting, I looked at it from the opposite end and asked very specifically, was the money for YSF in there for what appeared to be the same? And so asked the staff at that admin team, are we sure that this doesn't duplicate what in fact the grant now that CFR has gotten some status from public health? So I understand what you're saying about the ask. So what you're really asking is just for the asset team to take one more look to make sure we don't have duplications of services. Is that it? Between what's funded through that we've already put money in for assets?
So yes, but I think what I'm asking for is a little bigger than that, in that what I'm simply asking for is that we take this proposal and we refer it to our asset administrative team for comment and advice. Let them take a look at it, including what you mentioned, but even bigger and broader than that, and come back. These are our experts, right, who deal with this, the way human services touches everybody in Story County every day, that we just give them an opportunity. Maybe they won't have any comments, but they might, and I would hate for us to take some kind of action before we at least give them the opportunity to ask their questions, if there are questions, and then make some kind of comments, I would think, through Deb, back to us.
And Shelly, just to kind of help you a little bit, and because of course CFR used to be with the asset process, is that we function in our social services so differently than the other seven counties that are covered by this grant that CFR has, that I'm sure their board of supervisors just went ahead and approved it, right? Because that it's all one seamless through the board of supervisors. What Supervisor Sanders is just asking if that the team that ordinarily would deal with all of this and dealt with YSF had this portion of the grant, right? Before, just to explain to people, the Iowa Department of Public Health rearranged
the grant, who admitted more comprehensive rather than splitting it up to agencies providing in smaller catchment areas. And so it was either going to go to ISS or CFR. It was no longer where they could subcontract that support.
Every time I come in on Mr. Wilkins, was there, and as Laura said, you know, Story County does have a more complex process because we run try to run all human services funding through asset. If this were a grant, and I don't know, that would be applied for in the future, would you then be willing to look at running it through the asset process so we wouldn't be doing something that was not going through our normal process?
And Shirley, I'm going to speak. The relationship between asset and CFR is not good. So I think the board, CFR board, would need to make that decision.
Well, just a comment on that. A few members of the asset administrative team met with CFR about 3 years ago just to touch base to see if there was anything needed in the community that CFR was providing and might need to come back to the funders for. And it was decided at that point in time by CFR that everything they were providing within the Story County community for the citizens of Story County was being handled through either Medicaid, private insurance, or another grant that they were getting through DPH. And so I do think asset has made a good faith effort in reaching out to CFR and just saying, hey, are you doing something that we might need to consider funding locally again? I think that door is open. But yes, I mean, CFR would have to be willing to step across the threshold and go through the asset process again if they wanted local funding for some other things.
But this grant ultimately was awarded, what was it, a month and a half ago?
Yeah, we found out in December.
So on that, but I just think as a board member, I suspect the board will have a conversation about whether they want to get involved with that.
And I would refer this to the asset administrative team for comment and advice.
Sorry.
Okay. Any further discussion? I see Lisa Markley coming out, so I think that's further discussion.
I have a couple questions.
Sure. And Shelley, stay there, please, because you're probably better able to answer.
So, is this a reimbursement up to $7,200? Is that what you're asking for? Who is the fiscal agent on this?
Community Assembly.
You guys are your own fiscal agent. Mm-hmm. So the match funding that's required on it is according to the 50-50 match, correct?
We aren't doing a match. I mean, we are not applying through Iowa Department of Public Health for a... There is sometimes available funding under county board, but we have gone away from that process because of the issue of some counties can provide the match. It can't be certain funds being used at the county level.
If I can try, the comprehensive grant from IDPH is a 100%, correct, Shelley? It's a 100% from IDPH.
We have a small match, and I don't know what it is, but the contract is 18 months rather than a normal year. In a normal year, when we did the grant when we did it without Boone and Story County, our match was like $5,000.
From the total
and it
of
could
it.
Be in-kind match from other people as long as it wasn't state and federal.
This is additional funds that would not be used for the match.
Right.
Correct.
Well, this is supplement.
Yeah, these are
right.
Yeah. It's as Shelley said, some services can't be paid for through the grant. This is a request to pay for some enhanced service.
Mm-hmm.
So, we have motion, second. The motion was to go ahead and run it through the asset team. Would the two of you be willing to accept a time period on that? We have an amendment. Like if we run through in the next, instead maybe next week.
Yeah, I can see about getting a place on the agenda for next week, and it's usually beneficial, and I can talk to Shelley about this afterwards, to
having a CFR representative there to talk a little bit about it.
So it would come back to us on February 12th, this
one. I will not be here.
That's right, yeah. So, Shelley, what's your time frame?
We just needed to get our request in for the lawyer's office. So whenever you guys are wrapping that up, we would like to know.
All right.
Because none of these funds would flow before July 1. You're correct, before July 1, 2020. So then it doesn't seem like we're in a huge time crunch. So I'd say whenever Deb is available to be here, if you need her, would be the best time to do it. And show her, of course.
Okay. So, Perkins?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Bolton? Aye.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Next up on the agenda. Okay, consideration of minutes, please.
Yeah, I'll move approval of the 20th minutes for the 22nd.
Okay. Any discussion? Sanders?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Bolton? Aye. Okay. Consent? Yes.
You want to recess?
Are you guys good to go? Yes. We will take a 5-minute recess. So we'll be back here at 32. I'm out. All right. Okay, all right. Sorry, did you have a question, Shelly? We're recording. Okay. And we have all three supervisors here. Back from
Resolutions to assign funds and commit funds. In order to spend the committed budget, you have to initiate those funds. That's not the same as for assignment, but for commitment it is. So what the request is asking the state is to uncommit $16,335.31 of the $1.6 million that was put into the commitment of funds for conservation purposes.
Okay. Yeah, so I would move the uncommitment of funds.
Second. Any discussion? Sanders?
Aye.
Murphy?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Okay, you have direction there. Okay, I know this is, I think you kind of hidden in that case, don't you?
Yes, all right.
So let's go ahead and move forward to discussion and consideration of Resolution 1970 on commitment of fund balance for the Motor Grader League. Lisa, go ahead.
So as I did this as a separate resolution just because originally the resolution for this commitment was done back in 17 or 16 probably did this because that's when they started that lease. So in order to pay off the transfer, we need to uncommit these funds for the secondary
questions?
I move approval of Resolution 1970, uncommitting the funds for the secondary roads motor grader lease.
I second the motion. Discussion. Sanders?
Aye.
Murphy?
Aye.
Olson? Aye. Thank you, Lisa. Thanks, Evelyn. Okay, now we move down to discussion and consideration of process for announcing, scheduling, interviewing, and appointing members to the Story County Board and Commission. And I brought this forward as a continuation of the discussion that we had on January 2nd. At that time, we were discussing specifically the DA Commission and some comments that had come from a couple of the resigning members. And it was recommended by Supervisor Merkin that we widen the discussion to everyone at the same time. And I put the company letter here to recommend the following process that participants for 2019 and 2020. I'm going to start with asking Deb Shogoff to come up. And Deb, if you can recap for us how it was being done in the past, how we've been doing it the last couple of years. Please.
Currently, and I'll just start by saying we currently have one vacancy to fill in the Planning and Zoning Commission, so that is advertised. We have a vacancy on the Board of Health that is advertised, and then two vacancies on the VA Commission. So we have all of those vacancies to consider and applications are on coming up, in March and April. Mm-hmm. So we have some work ahead of us. Historically, how this has been handled is upon posting vacancies, applications are turned in to me, and then I hold those and make those available to all three board supervisor members upon closing of the vacancy. And then I go ahead and I schedule interviews with all of the applicants, and the chair of the board of supervisors and I meet with the applicants. We go through some questions and gauge their interest and ability to meet the requirements of sitting on a board or commission. And then upon conclusion of the interview, a recommendation is brought to the full board of supervisors by the board chair.
Okay. So when do you typically notify the chair of the applicable board or commission who the applicants are? Or do they request you for the commission?
I provide, so upon closure of the of accepting all the applications, I then provide all three board members with the application.
All three of the board of supervisors, but what about the board of health, the conservation board?
Yeah, historically I have not provided those chairs unless they've asked. The only exception to that would be the VA commission and the Iowa Code is very clear as to the involvement of the VA commission with appointments to the to that particular commission. And so I then forwarded applications to VA, the chair of the VA commission as well when it's applicable to that. But the other, unless it's requested, I have not forwarded those.
So now I probably turn to both of you, right, as you're the two who are currently involved in the process. And how long has it been since this particular process has been in use?
So this particular process, so there, we've done it three different ways over four different spans since I've been here, the 8 years I've been here. So when I first got here, we did not have a director of external operations, and it was handled, put together by the board chair at that time. We'd run it all through. We would actually do sequential interviews, I think as is being proposed here, and then the board chair would make a recommendation to the whole board on appointment. Then it changed to the process that we're currently using. Once we had a director of external operations, we went to that. And then for a short time in 2017, we went to a process where we were going to try to interview everybody out here. And then we went away from that and back to our previous way of handling.
I wanted to note that I had initiated the process with interviewing in front of the public and the board. That did not work at all. So that was only in play for a short period of time, let you know, because it I believe had some cost. People were reluctant to want to be interviewed in full in public. But the board could only do the interview and hear the same questions in a open session. Mm-hmm. So I just want to comment on that it was an attempt to, on my part, to try and get the board back involved and other people like who were sitting on the board of commission. So that was my attempt at trying that. It clearly worked out not to be successful very quickly. So I just want to comment on that. So, all right, now, please.
Yeah, so I was just going to go through what I'm reading that you're proposing that we do, and so I would just make a couple comments. One, I think your first bullet point, submission, after the submission deadline, that the staff, in this case Deb, would assemble and distribute copies of all the applications to all three of us. I think that's great. I think that's what we intend to do right now.
Right.
I think it's perfect. I'm not a fan of selecting blocks of time and sending people kind of on an assembly line to each of us. I think that gets awful close to a walking quorum if we're not careful. And I think it is cumbersome. It's uncomfortable for the applicant, and what we're really trying to get to is the best possible appointee. I trust our chair to continue to go through the process with the understanding that the other two supervisors are well within their purview if they choose to reach out to any applicant and say, hey, let's go grab a cup of coffee. I'd love to visit with you and meet you and try to build their own system. So that takes care of point number two from my perspective and point number three. I don't like the sequential interviews. I actually really like the idea of notifying the board or commission chairperson that we're talking about appointing. That's something we have not been doing except for the VA commission. I think it makes a lot of sense, and we have conservation people sitting here. I think it makes a lot of sense for the conservation chair to be included through the process, and then the conservation chair can share with their board whatever they do. I think it is really problematic if we go beyond including our boards and commissions in the process to creating a system where they are almost self-replicating. I don't think that's what we ever intended that we wanted to do. I think it's one of our decisions to make, but getting that feedback, I think, is important. And you say forum there, I think you mean quorum.
Correct. Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
And then I love the idea of the chairperson getting as many comments from as many people other than me and Linda as possible. I think that's something that we really try hard to do and should continue to do. And then I think it's the chair's responsibility to bring forward the best recommendation for whatever reason that they can, and then it's the full board's responsibility to discuss that recommendation. That's so I'm seeing one change that I like to our current process, and that is a notification of everybody who's applied to the board or commission chairperson for wherever that application is going. And that's my rationale.
Okay, Supervisor Merker.
Well, I probably have some different thoughts about this. Let me ask this first. I'm sorry not to use all of Chapter 331 of the code yet. Does the code say that the supervisor makes, that the chair of the board of supervisors makes recommendations on the chairs on board and commissions?
No.
Okay,
thank you. It's our process.
It's our process. Okay.
Yes.
I have had, because I served on a commission, and I went through a different process, somewhat hybrid maybe of what's being talked about right here. I think it is important that all of the supervisors get to meet the applicants, and I don't think it really is a good process to say, well, two of them could just ask them to come out for a cup of coffee. Because then we're really looking at not a process that was the one I went through, which was standard interview questions being asked. And even though board and commission members do not get any remuneration, including do not get mileage, anything else, you know, in terms of, you know, they still provide a very essential service. They make some very important recommendations, make some very important decisions on behalf of the county. So I really think that it makes sense for all the board members, and it's a board responsibility to appoint people, for all of the board members to meet those applicants on the same basis, which is a standard interview, which is what's done in all employment situations anymore, is a standard interview with standard questions. I don't think it has to be done sequentially. Lots of time. When I was interviewed for Planning and Zoning Commission, I was interviewed by all three supervisors. I did not feel it was an imposition. I personally would not have minded to have a public, you know, have publicly be interviewed, but since it is not a salary position, I can see why some people might think that goes too far. But personally, as a supervisor, I would like to have the opportunity to interview people who are interested in being on our boards and commissions and to be able to weigh in on an equal basis on the decision. I would think that if that kind of situation were what we looked at, I wouldn't place it upon the board chair to make a recommendation, since all three board members would have the same information.
Can you clarify that with placing it upon? So rather than board chair bringing forward saying, I nominate Joe.
I think any board member, if the process is the same, I think any board member should be able to make a nomination.
Okay, so let's go back here to the process that happened the one time, which was the chair, I made a recommendation, it died for lack of a second, that the chair had come in with those nominations. No, you hadn't. As a matter of fact, that was done from there. So what you're saying is you prefer that the agenda item just be selection or appointment. It'd be full appointment of planning and zoning or board of health, right? And then I entertain, or you entertain, or Ricky entertain, okay, because I got to cover 2019 and 2020, all right? So I entertain motions for a nominee for the appointment, and somebody would make a motion, or I make a motion. So I'm trying to work that through in my head about where the starting point.
I think any of the supervisors could make a motion.
So,
including the chair.
Yeah, so I believe that in our current process, that is still possible. But the chair has the ability to put on the agenda, here is the nomination, and if that nomination doesn't go anywhere, then it's open for other nominations. But it keeps us out of a potentially really awkward situation, unless that's where we have to go. And so I was one of the supervisors, Linda, that interviewed you when you came through for the Planning and Zoning Commission. your name's Ernie. I've been here since 2010. And I will tell you that that was a really cumbersome, awkward process. The board used to get together and determine which questions each board member was going to ask.
No, you don't ask the same questions.
That's not the way the process was. I'm just telling you. I mean, maybe we had the same conversation, but I can remember vividly being back there and one of the supervisors talking about, okay, you're going to ask this question and you're going to ask this question and you know, you handle this. And it was very problematic, to say the least. I believe that when we elect our board chair every year, we bestow upon that board chair certain responsibilities for us that's external to the code. If the code does not clearly spell out every single way we're going to operate, but we got to operate to the most productive point possible for making a decision. And I believe that this is one of those areas that the least cumbersome way to get to a decision, the way that doesn't hang members of the public potentially out to public discomfort. If we're going to sit up here and talk, well, boy, I really like Joe Smith. Well, no, I didn't like Joe Smith. I like Nancy Jones. And you go through that. I think it hurts rather than helps our process of trying to have the best board possible. I'm completely consistent in this. I believe that this was the right process when I was the board chair, and I believe it's not the right process, I believe it's still the right process, even though I'm not the board chair. I trust our board chair to help guide us through this process and get us to a great outcome. And so wherever we end up, I feel pretty strong about this. I've been through four different systems, and I believe that this one, if we add in notifying the current commission or board chair, I believe it's the least cumbersome while still gathering as much input as we can. And I would say this, as far as professional interview, at least when I was involved doing it, Deb Shildroff runs a great professional interview, I believe you look at our boards and commissions. We've got some really solid board and commissions. I think we just made some really good appointments to our boards and commissions. And if the proof is in the pudding in terms of what our boards and commissions look like, I'd put them up against just about anybody.
One of my questions in this was going to be whether there would be a standard interview questionnaire. And I was assuming that, you know, Deb in her role would be providing that to the board members. And no, I can see if you were sitting there and saying, who's going to ask what questions, I would not at all say that was appropriate, because that can get into, then you have to share answers, then you get into deliberation, which you should not be doing, except in public meetings. So I can see why you were uncomfortable with that, and that's not the kind of process that I was suggesting. And maybe another thing, quite frankly, that comes to me is, if I'm voting on something, honestly, I want to have equal, I think all board members need to have equal information if they're voting on something.
So I have a question about that, just from the comment about, so we all ask the same question, provided by staff accumulating those based on probably each one of our feedbacks or about what is it, here's what I'd like to ask, and so that we get one standard kind of list of questions, okay, assembled, then put together. But does that prevent us from asking a follow-up question based on the answer? And I'm almost looking back, okay, there's a yes, Alyssa? Please, because I know we got standard questions for the one that came up here. So are we prevented then from asking that follow-up question that might make the difference?
Follow-up questions are okay. Okay. The issue is if you ask the applicant a different question.
Okay.
So if you want clarification on one of their answers, that is absolutely okay. If you ask them a completely different question than you ask the next applicant, there's a real issue with that. You want to be consistent. You want to ask all the applicants the same questions. But if you want to dive into their answer a little bit more, or whether it's their experience or different things, and they didn't elaborate enough, you're okay to ask follow-up questions.
And it doesn't turn into a whole new question. Correct. And that was my concern.
It needs to pertain to their the initial question and their answer.
So has that been, it was just the lower chair doing that, is that how it has gone so far from your experience, Supervisor Sanders? I mean, are you going in with the same list also?
Yeah, we've had the same conversation with every single applicant for a position.
Regardless. Okay.
And that doesn't mean we don't have follow-up questions. It just means we don't ask new questions. We have asked for expansion of that. I'll just tell you guys, I am much more comfortable in my role now sitting over here, a backbencher or a sidebencher or whatever you want to call it. I am much more comfortable with taking the opportunity to go out and have an informal conversation with whoever our applicants are without asking them any interview questions and just get a feel and trust our board chair and our staff to get to the bottom of where we need to be. And if I have discomfort with what that is, I'll express it out here. So
I'd like to come ask a couple of follow-up questions. All right. So the responsibility of so if each of us interviewed, and I put it in such a sequential thinking it was easier on staff and the applicant, as opposed to trying to make the connection of individually scheduling time. So if we looked at a hybrid movement that requiring is the wrong word because we can't require each other to do much, right? But if we looked at rather than having staff schedule the sequential time and instead each supervisor scheduled their own time to go out and have coffee with you, okay? Is that less work for you, Deb, as you're the staff person for, for the time period we're talking about, comfortable for Supervisor Merkin and Supervisor Sanders about just rescheduling instead, but making sure everybody does talk to every applicant?
Well, so what I'm hearing the disconnect between Linda and I in this is that I believe, and Linda, you help me if I'm missing it, Linda likes the idea of all three board members being part of the formal interview process in some way, and I don't.
Okay.
And so I don't know that it's a scheduling issue as much as it is a philosophical. So Linda, you said just a minute ago you want all three board members to have, or like all three board members to have the same information on anything we decide. And what I'm going to tell you is that is completely unrealistic and undoable. There are so many issues, depending on the issue, where one of us, because of our interests or our roles and responsibilities away from this board table, that we're going to have a lot more information.
Let me, if I may.
Sure.
When the statement you made, when possible.
Okay, good.
And I think this is a place where it is possible that all board members could have the same information.
Right.
Information based on the same process. I know that it's not always going to happen, but when it's possible, when it's to do it, I think it should be.
I've expressed before that I believe it is one of our responsibilities as a member of the board to try and make contact. Now, I ended up doing a hybrid of it. I called some people on the phone. I had coffee with a couple people, so I mixed it up. If I knew the person already well, I didn't. Okay, so, you know, so I went along, tried to go along with that area of it. So, so for me, it's the formal, we all agree that we will talk to every one of them versus the less formal about is that it's up to you if you're not board chair whether you want to interview each applicant or not or have talk to them on the phone or have coffee with them, but that each would have some consistent data and maybe if the answer is to expand the questions on the application for consistent data. All right. But I do believe that all three supervisors are the people who should be involved. And then I believe that at least that the board chair of the applicable board or commission
and or members of that board or commission, because that really is up to them who they want to send, right, to the board chair interview, I guess, to look at that. Or, as I originally designed it, was that if everybody's doing sequential and, you know, one person could make an interview at one time. So, but I did look at that from it being the board responsibility. So, is it really about the formality so much as the information about that?
Well, I would say that there's one other thing. I think the process by which we select our board and commission members says something about the county. And we want professionalism from our volunteers. I think having a professional, consistent process by which we select our volunteer board and commission members gives that impression.
And I think we're doing that now. I think we
should be doing that. I don't think we're going out for coffee and asking various
people. Well, that is the other board's, the other supervisor's choice. I'm saying the formal process that Story County uses today conveys exactly what you're saying we need to convey. It's a very professional, very buttoned-down process. I would expect that to continue. Even if we don't change anything, I would expect that to continue.
And what is that exactly? Is that the supervisor or intends to follow through, or is there an expectation that a staff member will be there? Because I expect that we, the supervisor, should be doing the work, not having a staff person required there. That's part of it, okay? So professionalism as
well. So I get really concerned if you're saying now, if we're changing this to saying not only are all three supervisors going to ask the same sheet of questions, but we're each going to do it independent without any staff member there, Alyssa or Deb. I mean, I've enjoyed it running through Deb. I've enjoyed Deb making sure that our process was exactly what Linda just expressed she was interested in, which is professionalism, consistent, and we could get to a decision based on reliable, consistent information. If we're talking about now changing that to where we don't have staff involved in anything more than a clerical, putting together paperwork kind of thing, I get really concerned about that because, in my mind, that we need to have a process that is consistent regardless of the three people sitting here, right? The board of supervisors. And in order to do that, there is a staff component to that that I would hate for us to lose. So if that was on here, I missed it. I was not taken that we were going to exclude a staff member from being part of the process.
Okay. Well, it's on here. Where I say BOS and staff, it's very clearly separated out about what are staff duties and what are board supervisor duties. So I think you can take out. So, okay, on that. So in that case, then, who's the applicable staff person? From a, should it maybe be Alyssa instead because of it being the HR? You're looking for the same questions, you're looking for the HR component. So maybe that's where the shift is. And then
it could vary. I mean, I think that case could easily be made for me. It was our director of external, we set this up. The rationale behind the director of external operations is that all of our boards and commissions are, in essence, external. Even though they don't necessarily report through that position, in some cases, our staff members that work most closely with those boards and commissions do report through that external position. I think you could make a case that it's an HR. The beauty with our two staff members over here is they are both eminently professional and would make sure that we run a great process. So I would say I would like to have one or two. I like it the way it is right now, where Deb Shildroth is the point person from the staff working with the chair of the board to get us through the process. If you guys wanted to change that to Alyssa, I would absolutely be amenable to that. I will struggle if you say we want to exclude staff.
Okay. Supervisor Martin,
please. I have no comment on that.
Okay. All right. So any other things here?
I think the primary
question. I think all the other details get worked out depending on an option. I see there's two options we're talking about. What I'm suggesting is an option where all three supervisors do a interview of each applicant with standardized interview questions. What I am hearing Supervisor Sanders say is that he feels the Board of Supervisors chair and a staff person should do that. I think I've talked to plenty in terms of why I have feelings that I do about it. So I guess it's just that we, you know, I think all the other things we talked about, staff involvement being important, that kind of thing. So I think those decisions can be fleshed out after we just decide if we're going to have a supervisor's interview or are we going to have the board chair interview. That's the first thing, then we go from there.
Okay, so that sounds like it's clearly separated out to one or another motion to start with.
I'd move that we develop a process where all three supervisors would individually interview the chapter and board commission.
Yeah, and so I'm going to second it for discussion, and I'm just going to say I'm not comfortable with that. I think it gets us dangerously close to crossing the line on walking forms, and I'm not going to participate in a formal interview. I will absolutely do my due diligence and make sure that I'm comfortable or uncomfortable with any of our applicants, but I'm going to go through my own process to get there regardless of what we do here because I feel strongly that this is problematic.
I strongly feel that all three supervisors need to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear what you're saying about what you're calling informally, which to you informally means don't ask the same questions. Is that correct? Because that seems to be the difference, whether you have, I mean, you could, we all three could go have coffee with someone. And that's across, you know, but it's what questions were you using. Is that not correct? That's
what
correct.
Information we are eliciting through questions, and I believe that it's much more transparent what the process is when you have something that is uniform, and otherwise you don't know what the process was.
I so appreciate, Linda, that point of view, and I will just simply say this. Each one of the three of us were elected to make the best decisions that we could on any topic. Anytime we're making a decision, we get to make the best decisions we can based on whatever we deem is important individually, right? We don't all make decisions based on the same set of data, and we sure don't analyze that data the same way. And what I'm suggesting to you is that whatever process you guys determine we're going to use, with every one of our applicants, I'm going to go down the road of figuring out if they are acceptable to me. And it is a simple yes or no. I'm not even going to go down the road of figuring out who I want more. I'm going to say either this applicant is acceptable in my mind or not acceptable. And then I'm going to trust our chair to make a recommendation based on what they find. And if it falls into the acceptable category, I'm going to vote yes. And if it falls into the unacceptable category, I'm going to express that I'm not comfortable with that. I think that we can find a better fit. And so I'll vote no on whatever that recommendation is. And that's the process that I'm going to choose to use in my role on the board right now, in our role for appointing these boards and commissions. I'm completely comfortable with that role for me. I'm completely comfortable with making my decision based on that. And again, I'm not viewing this as a, when I was board chair, I felt like it was my responsibility to try to identify the absolute best fit possible on a lot of criteria for every one of our boards and commissions, and that's exactly what I think it's our board chair's responsibility to do now. Sitting where I am now, I think it's my responsibility to make sure that whatever that recommendation is an acceptable recommendation. And then I express that with my vote. And that's the way I'm using
it. It's important to me that we think about non-merit factors. And the phrase a better fit always gives me pause.
That's such very subjective. But I do agree that each one of us, as we both do that, the question is what's the process for us to get to make that determination about using our own judgment about what is the best fit? So, yeah. So I do support starting with having all three of us, and all three of us having a uniform set of questions. What we do with those questions, or whether we choose to exercise even the interview, we can't force each other to do. Correct? Am I right? That's the way it's code is, and various attorneys I've consulted with have indicated that, okay? That there's, so, but we can't say, here's the process we want to use. And, for that, to say all three supervisors are expected to be involved, but they don't have to be. Supervisors, we're going to be given a standard sheet. Now, I'm going to turn to Alyssa again here for HR, and I'm wondering if this needs to be run, you need to have a discussion with maybe our county attorney or our civil attorney about what happens if two of us use a uniform sheet of questions and another one doesn't use the sheet of questions. Are we really open to liability since it's a volunteer position?
I would prefer to leave it on that. You know, as far as there being any complaints, there could always be complaints of a civil rights complaint could be filed if they felt like, you know, there was some sort. I've never seen it with the Board of Commission. It could be with services that the county provides. It's not just employees. The county can get a complaint from anything, okay, technically. Now, would that be considered part of the actual interview process that legally, I mean, if they choose not to participate in that process, but yet they want to just, have an informal conversation, that would be up to the legal to weigh in on that. It's dependent on that. If that person, I don't think each individual supervisor has to ask the exact same question to each applicant.
All right.
What you ask all three applicants need to be the same. What Rick asked all three applicants is up with us. Okay, you can ask, each supervisor can ask a different set of questions to determine their viewpoint as to whether that applicant is who they want to recommend or urge into that position.
That's an interesting point. But I would also wonder if you wouldn't want to look at the set of questions the supervisor wanted to ask to make sure that there weren't any non-merit factors that might creep into questions.
And I've done that in the past. I have reviewed all the questions.
I think that makes sense to me.
So I'm happy to reach out if the board wants me to reach out to legal. I think that, does that answer your question, or as far as having the same questions? You don't want to ask each other the same questions. I want you to ask them all the same questions.
We might have a specific
set of questions. They're not the same questions, but if you have three or four applicants, you're asking all three or four applicants the same questions. Each individual supervisor, so that clears it up.
Now, I want to go back to the individual board of commission chairs, that each, and maybe their members, they each, whatever person it is, have to ask the same question. But if a different member of the conservation board is sitting in two interviews, and Jim is sitting in two interviews, only Jim has to ask those two the same question, correct? And then the other conservation board member would ask maybe if their two people too, correct?
Yeah, the suggestion is we're not asking different questions to different applicants because
if you do that, it in turn looks like you're trying to get the answers you want. We need some consistency. So I just look at each person that's whoever is interviewing.
Mm-hmm.
If you have five applicants, ask all these questions.
I think this is going to create a discussion because things keep coming up that make a lot of sense and help make this a better process. And I'm wondering if we have a motion right now on the floor, and I'm wondering if it seems to set the direction, and I'm wondering, given our conversation, if we voted on that motion. If that motion were to prevail, I would suggest that maybe staff could
work out
some of the details for it, mm-hmm. rather than us trying to work them all out right here this morning.
The suggestion also. So, did I hear that as a call to question?
A call to question.
Okay. All right. And the motion, once again, is, Shelley, can you read it back?
I'll be fine then. All supervisors interview applicants.
That's the motion. Okay.
It's not word for word.
Yes. But, okay.
Yeah.
So, all right. Okay.
You can amend it any way you want, if you want to do that.
I think I just assume leave it that simple. Based on our conversation, I think we know where we're, how we would flesh it out.
Okay. Workman?
Aye.
Sanders?
No.
Olson? Aye. Well, then next are directions to staff.
Yeah.
All right. And that would be, and I'm going to direct to both Deb and Alyssa, if that's comfortable for everyone. For you two to work together to come up with your suggested process from there as it goes on. I'm going to ask, paying attention to the avoiding of a walking forum, so consulting with legal about the avoidance of a walking forum. And instructions how it should be given to all people as far as questions to ask and not ask. Okay, so that's.
Yeah, and then just a note, we as a board don't have the authority to force compliance from another board.
Correct. That is correct. That is correct. So, okay. All right, thank you for that. Let's go ahead and we'll move on here. And the next item here is discussion and consideration of the ongoing role and membership of the Watershed Assessment Implementation Matrix Working Group. Right? And Leanne Harder, here it is, our item. We're supervisors, once again, a follow-up conversation. I see here members of the group that are here are Leanne Harder, Deb Shildroff, Mike Cox, and Gary Moore. So all four here, all right? The question first is, what would be the role going forward? The second question that I wanted to bring up was the addition of Margaret James to the working group. Should it be decided that the working group would continue and under what term? So I'll start with input from all four of the existing members of the group about whether you feel the working group should continue and what you feel the next role or next task would be to continue. So, Mike, if you want to start first, and then we'll go ahead and go with Gary, then Deb, and then Leanne.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I see these as two different things. The board, at your pleasure, established a group of individuals to develop an implementation plan. Part, and that was done, part of that implementation plan was then to develop an interdepartmental working group. Not necessarily the same group. And so you know, that's what was approved by, I believe, all of the boards and commissions that considered the implementation matrix, is to develop that separate interdepartmental working group. So, and I'll just speak for myself in that as part of the initial group that developed this plan, when we discussed this interdepartmental working group, I had in mind more individuals than were at the initial group, the four of us. And so, yes, here's what the folks that I see are those either elected officials or department heads that have some kind of water quality component in their respective roles. And so that could be the planning engineer, it could be the planning program director, it could be environmental health, it could be our floodplain manager, it could be someone from the conservation board, it could be someone representing the drainage district trustees and your body. So those are the folks that that came to mind when I was considering this working group.
And then what do you see then the next step or task for that group? Do you see it collectively maybe guiding our watershed efforts or something else?
Again, I guess to take off where I left, there's so many different aspects of what we do in county business, and many different roles of people, many different people have roles in water quality. Well, those folks aren't necessarily all convening and discussing what we do as a concerted effort moving forward. And so the emphasis here is to have that level of communication. And so as all of those folks are part and privy to each other's, I guess, needs, visions as they see fit, and to get to work together to make some suggestions or to guide that overall county efforts. Yes.
Thank you. Okay, I see Leanne Hart stepped up next, okay? So.
Well, I agree with Mike, what he said. And really, the first role of that working group is along the lines of what Mike said, educating one another on what we're doing and how we can move the, help assist move through the matrix forward and the strategies are outlined. It actually predates all of you. And actually, there's only a few of us in the room that will remember this, but we had to, maybe Rick, the Go Green Team. It was set up to really, we had a strategic plan on how we could implement sustainable practices throughout Story County government. The Go Green Team was really that shepherd, for lack of a better description, of that strategic plan, staff-led, really, to bring the initiatives then to the board for approval or just implementation. So I see similar type of process with the implementation matrix working group too. And I do apologize for my delay and coming up here. Our website went down, so I've been trying to scramble to get some news releases out there because it didn't go back.
Thank you, Lydia. And I smiled because I was appointed to the Go Green Team in 2017, but by then we didn't have a meeting. It pretty much was down to recycling, who's going to help carry out the trash, right? So that's interesting. Thank you for that. It's fine that you were having your struggle with the website. Okay, thank you. All right. So, Jerry, you want to go next and just tell me what you perceive of?
I don't know that I have that much to add other than what Leanne and Mike added. I think the working group that was formed, we met several times, and I think we put together a really decent implementation matrix that the board's congressional adopted. I think we were interested, and I'm sorry, but I did not hear that. I know Mike put money in the budget to fund a position to be the coordinator, and then that person be the go-to person to communicate with the board. And then I think we were just excited to work with the potential partners that we list in that matrix. So you asked, you know, what else would we be doing? I think initially it was just to get it to this stage. And as the board knows, there's a lot of work to do. And the times that we met, we talked about how important it was to have a central person that was employed and had that connection to Story County, and that, you know, they could oversee the various aspects of the work that needs to be done, and see that, you know, the work that the relationships with these partnerships worked out well, and then begin communicating back to the board on their success.
Okay.
So
you mentioned a central person. Then could you see possibly the entities that Mike listed being an ongoing advisory group?
The entities?
Well, county engineer, T&D director, conservation, somebody from the conservation board, or somebody from our board, environmental health. Could you see them as being staying assembled as kind of an advisor?
And working with a coordinator position, sure.
And then the other thing that I heard you say is that within the group, was it your kind of discussion impression that the person should be employed with Story County? Or
I think that's something that, at least that's what I was envisioning, that would be an employee of the county.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
I might have a follow-up, because there are numerous potential partners listed at the back of the implementation matrix. And I don't want us to think that this is simply Story County's thing. I mean, I see the county leading, but if we just think this isn't something that county employees only are involved in, we can't control this world out there, you know, and we can't do everything. We've got watershed management authorities, we've got NRCS, we've got Iowa Learning Farm, which I didn't see on the list, doing a lot of training, and our people on cover phones, you know, almost everybody else, that was the one I didn't see there. But I'm just thinking, how do we best pull all of these entities together, not just say, what is Story County government going to do, but what is Story County as everybody in Story County going to do? I kind of see that.
Well, and I don't know if I have an answer to that. It might help me out, but the meetings that we had, we realized the scope and magnitude of all the things that need to be accomplished, and there is no way that one person or that just the staff at Story County should be involved in this. There's no way that can happen and for this to be successful. We definitely have to reach out to these partners, and we have to do this in a united fashion.
I guess I would agree that listen, the world of water quality improvement, flood mitigation, whatever you want to call it, is vast. It's very broad. It changes very rapidly. It's a dynamic world that we're trying to do the best we can. And our intent with this working group was not to necessarily set policy, was not to do that, was not to guide every effort of water quality improvements in the county, was not. Because there are so many other partners involved that we need to work with. So we recognize that. We developed a list of all of the potential partners. It was quite an expansive list. But the intent, again, with this group is just for the in-house just for the county, direct county responsibilities as related to water quality. Mm-hmm. Not that there aren't external factors that have roles in that, but that each person on this group is going to know their respective external influences, whatever they may be, and be able to bring that to the group. Again, that this group really acts as a kind of advisory group to our own county purposes.
So let me, and I'm very different, let me turn it maybe 45 or 90 degrees there. It's rather than saying this group is an advisory group, I see this as the county's work group to do the things that need to be done within the county. And maybe some of those partners become our advisors, become the advisory group.
Can I go? Yeah, so I appreciate that. I see it as two separate components. So we've got two major issues under our at least part of our purview. The first one is how Story County conducts business and what that impact to water quality is. And second is how we are part of and maybe a leading part of the conversation countywide for all impacts to water quality. And I think the budget that Conservation put forward recognized the beginning of both of those things. I'm not saying they were in the right places necessarily, but it talked about the county hiring a position that was responsible to Story County for Story County's practices and how we do things, and that was a new position in the budget. And then the second thing that Conservation had in was a component for practices, and part of that, I think it was $50,000 of that, was to form an external relationship to start to pull these partners together to look at everything that's going on in the county and start to build this coalition. I appreciate that Leanne talked about the Go Green Committee. I think there's some similarities here. But I look at Todd in the back and the Safety Committee and say this is, in my mind, this is much more similar to safety and how we do it in Story County than it is anything else as far as this group goes. So we had a Safety Committee that was formed long before we created a position to bring in a safety director. And they went through the work of trying to figure out what we needed to be doing within Story County. Doesn't mean we didn't want the rest of the county to be safe. And part of that group was key staff members. It included a board member, but it also included some external help from a relationship we had, in this case, with Nat Tedesco, that helped us with that committee. And I think the work of that initial work group that we put together is done. I think that thing is over, and I think we're talking about forming a new implementation group that, in my mind, would include really the people that Mike laid out. It would absolutely include an appointee from the Board of Supervisors. I would think we would be best served by appointing our person who was involved in watershed authorities, but we could appoint anybody we wanted to that group. It would also include an appointee from the Conservation Board, because I think more than any of our other areas that has its own separate decision-making role from the Board of Supervisors, Conservation is going to fill that. And I think it would also include an external component from whatever entity the county decides to work with in creating these partnerships and encouraging practices outside of county-specific problems. And I would suggest that either be with somebody we have a current working relationship with, or that we do a full RFP in order to get to that. And that being the makeup of our committee here in the county, again, viewed much more similar to the Safety Committee, we got a lot of work to do, and we're not going to get there anytime soon, but the only way we're going to make progress is to take one step at a time. And I believe the two most appropriate first steps are hiring a full-time physician within Story County whose responsibility is to coordinate Story County's efforts for water quality, and then also look at developing a contract relationship with somebody external who can help pull together not only what we're doing in Story County, but what's going on in the rest of Story County, outside of Story County government. I believe we got a good model for that in our two of our three created watershed authorities. I'm a huge fan of not reinventing the wheel. But that's think we are. And to me, the decision point should be, do we want to create this committee, and I'm calling it a committee, and if so, who would be on it? Do we want to have a full-time county position, and if we do, who would it report to, or multiple, would it have dual reporting lines, much like Joe Quaker does with IRBM? And then finally, do we want to go down the road at looking at forming a contractual relationship with somebody external to Story County to help us with the rest of Story County?
Could the person report to the committee, the full-time position report to the committee?
I find that problematic. So Jerry Moore does report to the Planning and Zoning Commission. Margaret James, I think, has dual reporting lines. I mean, to the Board of Health, but also has responsibility to the county. Todd doesn't report to the safety committee. So I prefer to stick. My vision, and I'll just throw out there, my vision is it would have dual reporting lines to the director of conservation and our director of external operations is how I see this position making the most sense. That gives it a very direct line to the Board of Supervisors, and also gives it a direct line to our conservation board, which, again, is a decision-making body. It's not an advisory body.
So there's a couple of steps there.
I think. And then when I can, I got it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I'm not, and you're really in favor of, I'll just say that initially, in favor of the person reporting to conservation alone. I'll say that. Okay, which I didn't suggest that. All right, but I just want to explain that you have some independent authority of your own. I don't want that person to be reporting to a board that can go off in a different direction. So I'm more in favor of reporting either dually, you know, as a double, and I'm wondering how that works, because conservation has a lot more authority than the Board of Health, or at least that's how it's been set up here in Story County, about going off and making your own strategic decisions. So, I'm just headed here, okay, to then reporting to the Board of Supervisors and maybe Conservation Joint, which seems more practical about that. So then the question becomes, in reporting to the Board of Supervisors, is it to go directly to us, or is it to go through the Director of External Operations? And so that I'm opening for discussion about which seems to be the most logical way, given that if I'll be reporting to, I guess it would be the person would be reporting to my cost who's reporting. Is that not correct? It wouldn't be too directly to the Conservation Board, but to my cost.
So Joe Quaker, IRBM, reports to Mike Cox, but has responsibility to Darren Moon as well.
Correct. Primary responsibility and formal reporting is solely to conservation.
Right. But with that, Joe Quaker is not a standalone independent. He has responsibility to Darren Moon, who doesn't have responsibility to conservation.
Correct.
And one of my concerns about through another person to the Board of Supervisors is just the flow of information and direction. And the same then with conservation to a certain extent. So I'm thinking a little bit about what Supervisor Merchant said about reporting to this new working group of staff, which there would be representatives from everybody on.
And maybe it's John and Line on the TO kind of thing, because I don't know that this committee is going to be a hiring entity that's going to put in performance evaluations, do all of those things necessarily. What I'm trying to get at, and it's maybe bringing it up a bit to the, you know, level of what's the goal, and how are we going to, what do we need to do here to make sure it's everybody understands their relationship. I'm afraid if you put a position solely in one department, that it is then looked at as well as that department's responsibility to make sure that our water quality improves. And then everybody else kind of takes a bye. you know, I think it is that when I go back and I look at that watershed assessment, there are so many places in the county, there are so many departments that that touches, that I want to make sure everybody feels their ownership and their responsibility. And that's my struggle there, putting the position in one department, and maybe you need to do that administratively, management-wise, say that the position is in this department, but you have that dotted line on the TO that says the purpose of this position is administratively in this department for employment, evaluation, whatever purposes, but that direction, overall direction, comes from this committee who is charged with making sure that the county, all departments of the county implement.
Or direction, final direction comes from the board supervisors, but the committee itself being the intermediary.
So it's not a lot different than Jerry Moore's position right now. So Jerry Moore does not report to the Planning and Zoning Commission, but he runs his work program through the Planning and Zoning Commission. He takes direction is the wrong word, but almost takes direction from the Planning and Zoning Commission. Jerry Moore works for Deb Shilgroth, who works for the Board of Supervisors. And frankly, that's the way I like this position the best, is have it directly report to our Director of External Operations, but with responsibility. So it's kind of flipped on its head from Joe Quaker, with responsibility to conservation, but the beauty about it reporting through our Director of External Operations is she also has some of the other entities that would be involved in this group who report to her. I am not in favor of creating a new position that reports directly to the board. It's taken us years to get to the point that we have more of a horizontal rather than, or more of a vertical rather than a horizontal flow chart. And again, I go back to what I said in one of our earlier conversations. It is our responsibility to set a system that is not dependent upon the makeup of this board to be effective and functional on a day-to-day basis. And I think we achieve that through a joint reporting line with primary oversight and responsibility being our Director of External Operations.
I don't want this position to get too far away from this committee. That's my only problem with that.
Do you think Jared Moore is too far away from the Planning and Zoning Commission? You got firsthand knowledge of that.
I don't know that I agree with that analogy totally of using Jerry's position, because that is one facet of county operations, planning and development, planning and zoning. We are talking about lots of different facets of operations here. So what I'm looking at there is that I think this committee is very, very important because it holds us all accountable to each other and holds this position accountable to that whole process. It is a process. It is a work that is going to take very many parts of the county as well as the external entities.
I agree with you completely.
So I really don't, I want this committee to be a strong dotted line on the TO, however the position is placed.
So would you accept Todd as a suitable comparative analogy to this position? Safety touches lots of different places. We've got to go everywhere with it. Todd works with conservation. Todd works with everybody in the county. He reports to Alyssa Wignall because that is an internal function, but he has very strong ties and very strong responsibility to our safety committee.
I think that's a better analogy or a better, you know, a connection or comparative on that. I do, given that Todd interacts with a lot of different people directly. Also, you know, it is a strong position with some independent authority / expertise based upon the topic of safety and was brought in for that. So I like that better, okay?
So you're talking about
position reporting directly to Director of External Operations?
Yes, with more than a dotted line, joint responsibility, but not hiring authority or job evaluation directly aligned with conservation, but we have to have a foot in both places.
Okay, I just got one.
So who would you, would the employee be a board supervisor's office employee?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
To Director of External Operations, but what I'm, so the way Joe Quaker works, he has joint reporting responsibility, but his primary area is to conservation. I'm flipping this one on its head, and I'm saying this is joint reporting, joint responsibility, but its primary reporting is through the Director of External Operations rather than the Conservation Board. That said, I think there is a substantial oversight and direction that can come from conservation, because if we're not pulling those two entities in, Board of Supervisors and Conservation, we're not going to get anything done.
Right. What happened to the committee that was being recommended?
That's still there. That's internal to Story County, much like our safety committee is internal to Story County.
Okay.
But reporting, though, it's very clear Todd reports to Alyssa. I mean, it's very clear, and no matter what the, you know, and the safety committee gives it, conservation is represented on the safety committee, that's Joe, speaking of, all right? So, but there's, Todd's only reporting to one person, okay, which and the safety committee. The safety committee is giving the marching orders, the safety committee is setting direction, and then the safety committee then brings it to us if when it gets to a certain level, correct? It's usually an individual motion or an individual recommendation on programming. So this position in following that model would go through external director of operations, okay? Not have dual reporting though, because conservation would be on the committee, correct? Yes. In fact, the way this is set up, I think conservation gets two positions, just running off of my list, which I like, all right? Well, one would be Mike. And one would be one of the board members of conservation. Then Mike also suggested, well, a supervisor. And also you said in drainage trustees, but there's only three of us, so we two of us can't be on the state committee, right? Okay. So we would have a board. So it's a strong committee, just like the safety committee is.
Right. So the difference that I...
Okay.
Jerry, are you supposed to be managing now? Or Leanne, are you subplaying?
Leanne is,
okay.
Yeah, so, I would say the difference between safety and water quality is that we have certain components within the county that every single area is relying upon, but they don't have direct responsibility for. And I would say safety, human resources, IT. I'm sure there's more. So conservation, and I'm going to use conservation because that's what we're talking about here, has to adopt our, or doesn't have to, but they generally adopt our human resources policy, and they utilize our human resources to get anything done. They adopt or should adopt our safety policies and procedures. But they don't have a direct, it is not part of their mission. It's part of the thing that they have to do to operate human resources, IT, and safety. Water quality and water quality issues are part of the absolute mission that we charge conservation with, and it's why I view this position differently in regard to conservation than I do safety or IT or human resources.
I'm so confused. I'm sorry. I've heard several times here. First, I said, are you suggesting the employee be under the Director of External Operations? I thought I heard a yes then.
Yeah,
now I'm hearing you talking about the employee being in Conservation Department. Mike, do you report to the Director of External Operations?
No.
Okay, so that's where I'm confused.
Yeah, there's no confusion here. I've been clear all the way through.
Okay.
Reports to, has primary reporting to the Director of External Operations, but a joint reporting line to conservation, like Joe Quaker, has primary reporting responsibility to conservation, but also jointly reports to our engineer. I'm just flipping it. I'm saying there needs to be a very direct tie to conservation from this position if we're truly going to try to get out of it what we want to get out of it. I just think it's really, really important, and I'm completely good with it not being housed in conservation or even having primary reporting to conservation, but it has to have some direct tie to conservation beyond the fact that conservation is going to have at least one and maybe two members of this committee.
So what Sherry made, though, what is some, not on the end of the department, now report to the department, but have some tie other than. I don't understand. I mean, we're talking about a very vague concept there. I don't understand what you're saying, Rick.
Yeah, I don't think it's that vague.
With Joe Quaker, it's because one person, Joe, is doing two basic different jobs, or connected jobs, but those jobs are under two different departments. Am I accurately describing Joe's role?
Yes. Joe Quaker. Joe's, again, like Rick said, Joe's reporting responsibility is formally, is solely to me. However, part of his workload is directed by the engineer. And so there is communication between the engineer and I on working with that position and in asking that position. Because he ultimately does have some level of responsibility in both of those departments.
So let's be more specific. His responsibilities under engineering are related to the clearing out of ditches and drainage ditches, correct? Is that enough of a...
Not really.
All right. Okay, then.
Joe's responsibility under engineering is erosion control, right-of-way, vegetation management, etc. Joe's responsibility under conservation is drainage ditch management, and if you will, the kind of the vegetation choices, etc., that he uses in all of his roles. So that's really the derivation. The secondary role is right-of-way. He manages those right-of-way using principles and direction from conservation, with the caveat that some of the engineers' considerations have to come into play in that. I.e. where native prairie is planted. You can't plant it everywhere, and you have to be mindful of safety concerns and visibility, etc. But when the engineer does the ditch cleanout on a regular basis, then Joe works specifically with the engineer on that as far as tasking and work order. Developments, etc., on getting those engineer-derived responsibilities complete.
Can I make a point of order? It's 12 o'clock right now. Our building is closing at 1 p.m. to the public. I don't think we're going to make a decision about this today. I'm not sure how. I think we have some things that we agree on. One thing I've heard is we want a central person to oversee the county's work. We have questions about...
I don't know that we agree upon that, but
well, yeah. Then maybe we don't.
So are you moving toward the put it on the future agenda?
I'm moving towards let's put it on a future agenda, but trying to figure out how we don't go over the same ground again.
I'm not sure that's possible.
Probably not, but... I have a lot of interest in this, obviously. I would be willing to try to work with somebody on a proposal. I don't know if that's the way that we want to do it, but I would be willing to work with staff on a proposal to try to put something together that, you know, at least had some of the ideas that we've talked about today. I don't know if that's the way to do this or not. I'm just thinking or maybe we need to ask the committee to come back and give us a more specific proposal. That might be the better way to do it now that I'm thinking of it.
Yeah, so Linda, I couldn't agree with you more. So I said, I think when I started this, that I thought that initial committee was at the end of their work. I think what I'm hearing right now is that initial committee is not at the end of their work. But I would ask, Linda, that you work with that existing committee to draft some recommendations that we would consider and that we get it on our agenda as quick as we possibly can to have that full conversation.
That's fair. I would send that first. Yes. The exception, though, is I'd like to add Margaret G. to it also, to that group. So that would be the group of Mike Cox and Jerry Moore, Deb Shildroth, and Leanne Harder, and Margaret Jane to work with Supervisor Merkin to put together more of an ideal or a couple of options, suggestions about what it might look for reporting. Now, Leanne is back there shaking her head. Would you like to say something, Leanne?
No, she asked me a question. I asked her a question.
Oh, got it. Okay, thank you. I thought maybe you were like, don't give me one more thing or I'll just absolutely never leave the building. Okay.
I have some strong feelings about this, but I simply commit this to staff. This is not a way for me to try to get my way on this issue, or this is what I'd like to see. I'd just like to be interested and try to help facilitate a process.
Okay.
That's acceptable to people.
So I think it's completely acceptable, but I think it's fine if you have very strong feelings that you want to. The beauty for us here in Square County is we have really strong staff. I mean, we have really strong staff, and they're going to be very willing to give you their opinions regardless of what yours are, and I think that's the way we get to the best possible answer. And so, Linda, I don't even need your caveat on there. I think you're the right person to work with them, and we see what comes back. And then, hey, I promise you this, if I disagree, I'm going to tell you guys that
yes,
I disagree.
You always do. Your voice. That is true. So, all right, are we in agreement that that's the direction we're going to give to staff and to Supervisor Merkin? All right, that's great then. We, of course, are not going to go ahead and carry on with the next one on the agenda, so we'll just jump right over that one. F2 including consideration. Thank you, everyone. All right, we're going to go to number 10 now for animal control quarterly report.
Well, we've got to do the construction evaluation.
I'm sorry, I jumped over that one. Huh? Yes, okay. All right. So we have moved up discussion and consideration of the ongoing role of membership of the Watershed Assessment Implementation Matrix Working Group.
No. I'm sorry. Construction Evaluation Resolution.
It's not on my agenda because I downloaded it.
Okay, so I will do this just in the interest of time. So Story County has passed the Construction Evaluation Resolution every year since 2003. Many years we've done it on our consent agenda. I think this is an important tool. It is the only tool that counties have to have a voice in any proposed master matrix. And so I would move approval of Resolution 1957, Construction Evaluation Resolution.
Second.
Discussion.
Call the
question.
Sanders.
Aye.
Merkin. Aye. Olson. Aye. I'd like to see animal control up here.
She's coming.
She's bringing.
We got show and tell today. I love show and tell.
She's bringing a gift today, and I'll expect it to get mine. Okay. That'd be great. So Sue, you brought us a gift. Talk to us about it, please.
Okay, well, it's actually on my agenda, which is number 7, Animals in the Cold, Snow, and Wind. So I wanted to kind of bring everybody an example of...
Supervisor Sanders, will you be coming back? Should we wait for you?
Come back.
Should I?
No,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Okay, so this guy, a couple weeks ago when we had our first temperature below zero, was found astray out by Peterson Pit, sitting on the middle of the road. People came for several days, and they could catch him. And finally, he hunkered down right in the middle of the road on a dead end and said, I don't know what's going to happen, but there's got to be something done here. He's got 2 weeks of us feeding him everything he wants, and he's this thin yet. Okay. So, not only is that terrible in itself, he's a very, very friendly, loving cat. Feral cats don't end up being like he is. He was probably dumped out there. He's got frostbite on his feet. He's got pads that are like cracked leather, and his tail is dead from here on down.
Oh, baby. The vet going to take it off?
Yes. So, I guess I want to talk a little bit about that and about how important this all is during the winter. Basically, this guy, when he came in, had severe neurological problems. He couldn't stand up. He could not walk. He was dragging himself. This to me out in the cold. This isn't any other element than what the cold weather did to him. And as days have gone on, he has become more steady on his feet, probably because of nutrition, but also that he's finally had a chance for his body to kind of get back to a normal temperature and everything. And I guess what I'm saying is he wouldn't have survived out there very much longer. And I think about the animals out there tonight and tomorrow night. We've posted a lot of stuff on our Facebook page. We've tried to get the word out there. We've been watching certain, places that were concerned. But I don't think some people realize sometimes when the cold's affecting you, it's affecting them. And just because they have a fur coat on means nothing. It's like you wearing just like me wearing this walking outside in below zero weather. It's going to keep me warmer than if I didn't have it, but it's not going to keep me in very, very cold weather. So I kind of wanted to just go over some things to have on record. And that goes under animals in the snow, cold, and wind. When it comes down to this, if you're cold, when you're putting your dog out, they're cold. Okay? I'm very sure. Short-haired animals are even more susceptible to the cold. So, dogs like labs, Labradors, Beagles, any short-haired dog is going to feel even more. And so there's guidelines that we like people to follow. One is cats should not be left outside, even if they are the rest of the year. This is no time for, they've been fine this long, they're going to make it. This is time to be proactive and get these animals inside. There's no other way I can put it. If you normally have an outside dog that is an outside dog, I have people say, well, I have a husky and he really likes the cold. Okay, but the husky doesn't even like 40 or 50 below. So if he's normally an outdoor dog, bring him in tonight. If you don't have a good place, keep him in your basement, but don't leave him out. Don't leave cats to wander and say, cats can fit in anywhere and find a place to be. This guy didn't, and that's very concerning to me. So when it comes to dogs, if they absolutely must be outdoors, it has to be a dog house, preferably built off the ground, a couple inches, so not laying directly on the cold ground. It has to be stacked and stuffed with straw, preferably. Blankets get wet, they freeze up, they become hard, and they do no good. Straw is, they can regenerate the heat within the straw. So straw, and I stuff it full so they have something to burrow into. And don't use wood chips, because wood chips, flatten out and really, they can't get down into them to get the warmth they need. If you're letting your dog outside go potty, at the very maximum, 5 to 7 minutes. I mean, I know from personal experience now, my dog, literally, I've never seen dogs that can move so fast to go potty now but can't move that fast. So they know it's cold. They don't want to be inside.
Rufus has got his dog door down to a 30-second deal.
Yeah.
For 30 seconds and he's back.
So livestock, for you know, livestock, we got to take care of these animals. There's one thing that all animals have in common, whether it's cattle, horses, cats, dogs, whatever is being outside, is that they have to not only have good shelter, but a fresh supply of unfrozen water. And you're thinking, well, it's going to be that cold, it's going to freeze in an instant. They need to be given the chance to drink a couple times at least in a 24-hour period. It's an insulator for their body. It heats their body, such as adequate amounts of food. And when I say adequate, I'm saying more than you normally do, because it's going to also be an insulator for them. Very important. Cattle, a lot of people think cattle, they can be outside and all this. Give them a windbreak. This is in our county ordinance. It's very important that they have a windbreak or a shed, a full shed, or something that they can at least, you know, if you have a steer that wants to stand outside and be a big deal about it, you can't bring him in because he want to. But you have cattle for the most part. If you're giving them a choice, they will go indoors. And
Sue, are you getting a lot of calls?
We're getting a lot of calls. We're getting, I would say more questions. For example, yesterday I got a call from a lady. I appreciate the calls. She has chickens and ducks. She's got a double woven wire pen for them to be in with a tarp and a little chicken coop outside. She said, is that enough? I said, no, not in that windshield. So I encouraged her to, you know, make a place in a shed, put some straw down, she could do a heat lamp. That's what they're going to have to survive.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other kind of tips before we move on to the report?
Just one of a couple other things here. Watch their ears, their pads, their feet. They get frostbitten just like you do. Kitty is proof of that. And, you know, be careful how you use the heat lamps, but if you have them, do use them. The animal will appreciate it, and they'll come out better in the end if you do that. Blanket your horses. If you have horses, blanket them, put the blanket on them. Have them frozen water for your livestock. You know, most people have automatic water. Make sure the float is working. If you have smaller ones, buckets, make sure that they're working. And I guess the most important thing is if anybody sees an animal in distress, don't say, well, I thought somebody else would call about it, or I thought my neighbor would turn it in. Let us know. That's what we're here for. That's what our job is. And we, you know, we're so concerned about what's going to happen the next day and a half, 2 days. And so there's things that can happen that humans can do to make sure that, you know, the animals get through this.
Sure. Thank you. I think they're good tips, given that we're closing, that to remind people to take care of all living creatures.
Wrap this up here.
Okay.
A little quicker. So we have currently 162 animals in shelter, 149 cats, 9 dogs. We have 2 dogs that are fostered out. One of them just had 5 puppies. She came in big, so we didn't do anything for rabbits. Our remodeling update is coming along well. The office, the new cat adoption area are almost done. Handicap bathroom as well as handicap parking are also in place. We're still working on our mechanical and electrical. We now have our fob for unlocking the doors, which is, I don't know about you guys, but it's taking me a while to get used to it because I'm used to carrying keys, so this is something new for me.
Yeah.
We have a new cat visitation room, a dog visitation room. We have a baffle in our dog room to help with the sound, which has made a difference. You know, a barking dog is never going to be silent, but it will at least cut down on the decibels that are ringing through their ears and ours. We have our own laundry room officially. It's not in the furnace anymore. We have an official laundry room.
Good.
It's a laundry room. And our outside dog play areas, they're getting used so much before this cold spell. Our volunteers love to take animals outside and play with them. And we like being able to take animals who are not house trained out there and just let them kind of do their own thing and then collect them back into the shelter. So the outside play areas for the dogs have been wonderful. There's so much good progress being made. And when everything is completed, we will have an open house. That's just to be determined. I think the weather right now, a lot of that is dependent on the weather. But we will make sure that we advertise it well because we want everybody in Story County to come and see what this new shelter is. And, you know, appreciate the fact that these animals are important. And I can move on to another place that I will talk about that. I wanted to talk about adoption numbers rising. And so in late office, the main office in the shelter was moved into our former adoption cat room. So we have an office in there as well as the cats that were up for adoption. It was extremely closed. It was extremely, you know, we didn't have a choice. It was kind of like going with the construction. And so if for a while the movement in there was awful, really. If you had more than two people and the person that was manning that front desk in there, you were crowded. So it was very frustrating at the time. And in December, in November, we kind of pretty much had an empty shelter. We only had the one room open. The dogs went off to be boarded for some work that was going to be done, the mechanical stuff. And so we ended up, I just kind of wanted to throw this out there, that the month of November, for instance, we only had 9 total adoptions. That was not good. But a lot of people, I heard from a lot of people, they thought we were closed because of the construction, all the vehicles that were out there for a while. They said, you're not even open. I'm like, yeah, we are. You know, but so we did have a lot of people that didn't know, and it was just not a good way for us to represent ourselves. But we also understand that's what happens with remodeling.
What's happened now?
December, we only had 13 adoptions, 5 of which were reptiles. So again, we were staying at that stalemate. And as of the 25th of January, we have 36. So that has zoomed right back up. We're getting animals into vets to make sure that they're getting spare neutered when we get them back out.
Right.
So that has changed a lot. They love the newest cat adoption room. We're down to coming soon a fundraiser near you. So this month, we feel grocery is doing the rounded up to the next dollar for us.
Oh, nice.
So at the end of the month, you know, we'll be the recipients of that. On Saturday, this past Saturday, January 26th, there was a fundraiser for the animal shelter at G.I. Jill's Food and Bar in Roland. And she's a wonderful lady. She was in the military, but she also has a heart for animals. On May 18th, we will have the return of our shelter shindig with T&K. Last year, the owner had a heart attack, and they did not have it, but they're very excited about bringing it back. So we'll have petting zoos and silent auctions and everything like that. On June 15th, we have our Chase and Tail, which will be the third fundraiser from them for us. This is a motorcycle ride, and last year this individually raised over $6,000 for our shelter, which was a very big help. Cat dinners in the spring. So a seasoned veterinarian can do 10 cats in less than an hour when it comes to neuters. They can just zip right through with their friends and ready to go. So we have 2 vets on board from different clinics that are willing to help us with that. So we're going to plan 2 days, and I think, first of all, the priority will be for the people that live out in the county that have large groups of cats, population control, but we'll also be going through to our contract cities, and then it will trickle down when there's time. If there's spaces left, then we will open it up for everyone.
Good. Excellent. I'm going to ask, you know, I've done this before, and please, you know, see if we can coordinate with outreach to get as much publicity on that as possible.
Right. And
people know about it.
We're hoping that maybe with 2 vets, we can get, 125 to 150 cats.
Okay.
That'd be awesome. Saturday, March 2nd, we'll begin having longer hours.
Okay.
And so this will be what we're planning now is on Saturday, we open from 11 to 3. Somebody will come in first thing in the morning and clean.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that's cleaning and the person that's also going to work that day will stay there and man the shelter. We will also be open one night a week. It'll be a Thursday, and that'll begin on March 7th. Now, that being said, this is a starting point for us. This is to see what the interest is, see what the traffic is, and also to see how we can balance this with our employees. If it works, then we're hoping to move on to more hours on that.
Okay.
So skipping down to our great animal supporters. This is like one of my favorite parts.
And Sue, you kind of wanted to remind you that county's closing at 1 today.
Oh, okay. So let's just go over this.
Okay.
So I think all of us have a few things to
okay.
say before we get Christmas season through the middle of January, we brought in $9,836 in donations. So that's the long and the short of it. And we have many, many people to thank. But that's not always just cash. It's also, that is cash, but it's also people that bring us in food and pet beds and, you know, give us their time and want to do things. And I just, you know, we're very lucky we have the support that we do.
Sure.
Okay. And one final thing is the open house for the remodel of the shelter. I already talked about that. But I'm looking for brownie, cookie, or bar bakers. Okay. We'd like to have some homemade goodies. So if anybody is so inclined or does a good job of baking, we would love to have you help us make things. We'll probably end up buying some of it, but we're going to try to at least have a remodel.
For the open house.
That's for the open house.
All right. Okay.
And that will be decided when the work is done and we get everything set.
Okay. So don't start baking.
Don't bake yet.
All right.
I would say it's a credit to you and your staff, Sue, that you have the kind of support, both monetary and otherwise, that you get. It's because of the job you do and how you take care. I mean, I think the cat, I'm not a cat guy, but the story of that cat and what you've done, what you and your staff have done to bring back is awesome. And thank you.
Thank you. Thank
you. You too?
I'm take that cat away. I want to say hi to you.
Okay.
Yes. Maybe an adopter.
She's got two of them already.
The whole show.
Yeah. Right. Let's move on. I don't know. Anybody left here who would like to provide public forum number two? I see staff only except for Robbie. So, all right. Thank you. Liaison on the side. Committee meeting updates and announcements from the supervisors. We'll start with Supervisor Murphy. Anything you'd like to tell us?
Everything's changed.
Okay. You know, pretty much Supervisor Sanders.
Yes, the ring office canceled this morning, so that was supposed to be our first formal meeting. We rescheduled for Friday morning at 7 a.m., so I'll do that before I leave town.
Okay. And I also looking at lots of cancellations here, been contacted. Let you know that the compensation board met last night and they went with a 10% increase in the sheriff's salary and 3% increase for all of the other elected officials. So with that,
plus $1,000 to the board chair, which is we had not been doing for a few years.
Well, right now, I didn't hear that.
I didn't hear that.
It came out in the minutes that $1,000 extra for the board chair.
It was not.
It was not.
So let's make sure we get those minutes.
That's what Stacy was. That's what Recorder Heritage was talking about. We didn't figure it. We couldn't tell what she was saying. We will get that fixed.
So that was something that the board instituted the county instituted in like 2004 or 5, and it continued through, I believe, 2015 or so. At that point, I was board chair, and I just said, no, it's not that. I mean, it's part of the deal.
Right.
I selected
right.
it, you know, part of the deal. Right. So I was surprised when I saw it.
I don't recall that, so we'll have to check into it.
I know exactly when it happened, but the whole sentence was never said. Stacy, Recorder Herrick, sits on the back of the room. Plus, for the Board of Supervisors, it didn't say any doubt, it didn't say anything else, and I thought it was for us to talking about bringing something forward. So, no, that didn't happen. I'll call Steve McGill to get the minutes right away. All right. Upon that, yeah.
I think I've moved it with you.
Right. Thank you. Okay.